Sometimes, while building a strong democracy, we gotta use some strong language. So be warned.
Welcome to The Rabble in the House. The Rabble podcast is where Texas politics meets digital confetti and virtual hugs. And it's usually just a podcast, but you might be tuning in now from Facebook Live. If you don't feel like looking at our faces, subscribe to The Rabble in any podcast store instead. Or if you're listening to this now as a podcast, check out our faces on social media at The Rabble TX. We are your hosts. I'm Becky Bullard.
I'm Ashley Chang. This is the fourth episode in our series, In the House, where we explore Texas-specific tidbits about timely topics and use just as much alliteration as possible while doing it. We also talk about how all of that relates back to decisions being made in our state legislature. And welcome today's episode, the What the Health Care episode. And really, what isn't a healthcare issue? I mean, obviously we're in a pandemic, that's hard to ignore, but when it comes down to it, I mean, seriously, like LGBTQIA plus issues, healthcare. Gun violence, healthcare. The environment, healthcare. Racism, healthcare issue. We're covering as much of it as we possibly can today.
And we have a great show this afternoon. We have two amazing Democratic candidates who will be joining us shortly to vie for the title of the Rabble in the House quiz show champion. Competing for fame and glory on this episode are Elisa Simmons, running in Texas House District 94, which includes a large part of Arlington near Fort Worth, and Ann Johnson, running in Texas House District 134 on the west side of Houston. And we made it very easy for you to donate to both of their campaigns with just one click. There is a $500 match to each campaign from Texas Blue Action Democrats and Flip the Texas House. And we will be dropping that link to donate to both of these amazing ladies. We're trying to raise $1,000 for each campaign in the chat, or you can find it in the show notes for the podcast.
And this is our second to last episode in this series. And we've honestly been blown away by all the candidates who are working to flip seats in the Texas House and all of you who are helping them do it. And when we flip 9 seats, we just need 9 more and get a Democratic majority, we'll start to make real progress on all of the issues that each of us cares about. And we want to give a special shout out and thank you to Carrie Marshall and everyone at Flip the Texas House for helping us make this whole series happen.
Yes, Carrie is a powerhouse, and she is amazing at hooking us up with all these campaigns so that we can help flip the Texas House. And of course, stick around for our Blue Squad mission at the end of the episode. We love how easy the Blue Squad app makes activism. You can download the Blue Squad app for free in any app store. They will tailor your missions to you so you can focus on the issues that you care about and the types of action that you like to take. And you can do it all from the palm of your hand. We will drop a link to download the app and find all of the Rabble's missions in the chat and in our podcast show notes.
And if today's episode just isn't enough activism for you, we have a new podcast series that Becky came up with because, well, she just wants to spend every day doing democracy with all of us. And now we only have, by the time you're watching this episode, I think we have like 2 weeks left until October, until early voting, which is October 13th. 2 weeks, y'all. So the challenge is called, the podcast series is called The Rabble Daily Democracy Challenge. And you know, it's like one of those daily diet challenges, except without like all the body shaming. And, you know, we're all about like toning up our governing bodies. It's like a democracy diet, and we want all of you here for it.
Oh my gosh. And just to reinforce that it's not about body shaming, at the end of this whole series, we're going to throw a virtual pizza party. Just like in elementary school when you used to get the perfect attendance pizza party. Except you don't have to be perfect with us, y'all. You can just do as much as you possibly can. You can still come to our pizza party. But we have done this series. We're doing it every day for 46 days up through the election. And we picked the number 46 because we are trying to get our 46th president elected. So everything that we do will be somehow related to making sure that we get people to turn out the vote in Texas so we can flip the state and hopefully get new leadership in our state and in DC. So you can find it just in our normal show feed, The Rabble. And we're just calling that series The Rabble Daily Democracy Challenge. So I hope that you will join us for that.
Okay, let's get into this game. Becky, who's playing with us today?
I could not be more thrilled to introduce our first contestant, Alisa Simmons. So because I'm now full-time teaching assistant for my pre-kindergartner and first grader who are doing virtual school, I am phoning in my own homework here on The Rabble, and I basically copy and pasted this bio from the Annie's List website. So quick plug for Annie's List. They're an incredible organization that is solely dedicated to electing progressive women in Texas, and they are run by some of my favorite women of all time. So please give Annie's List your money. They taught me almost everything I know about how political campaigns in Texas work. Not to mention, Annie's List has endorsed both of our guests today. So seemed appropriate to plug them. But enough about Annie's List. Back to Alisa Simmons. She is a sixth generation Texan. Her father's family was the first Black family to settle in Pflugerville. And this Marine mom is the mother of two sons. And when her sister passed away without warning in 1997 due to a sudden aneurysm, Alisa immediately became mom to her eight-year-old niece as well, eight-year-old at the time. Alisa has somehow lived many lifetimes already, even though she looks very young. She was a broadcast journalist for 12 years and then transitioned to a career in public safety, where she spent 22 years as a county 911 administrator, supporting dispatch operations of all Tarrant County EMS, police, and fire departments. She is now an entrepreneur. She started a promotional products business, DJ's Print and Promo, which is why she has such awesome campaign swag. Show them your little shirt with the logo. I love it so much. She has also dedicated much of her time to service, starting when she was a young mother as a room parent at her children's schools. Her leadership was frequently sought after, which led her to serve on a number of committees and boards, including the Chisholm Trail Chapter of the American Red Cross Board of Directors, the YMC Arlington Board of Directors, President of the Arlington NAACP, second vice president of Texas NAACP, and ACLU Texas Board of Directors. Welcome, Alisa.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. Our next contestant is Ann Johnson, running to flip House District 134 in the Houston area. And not only is Ann a former chief human trafficking prosecutor and expert, she is also a small business owner, but she is a current teacher. So Becky, maybe she'll have some tips for you as well.
I need them.
As a new at-home teacher. As a native of Houston and the youngest child of six, I have come from a family of five siblings, so I appreciate that and love big families. Anne has spent a lifetime surrounded by and involved in public service. Her parents are former Texas State Rep Jake Johnson and senior retired district judge Carolyn Marks Johnson. She's also worked in Texas State Rep and U.S. Congressional offices, the Legislative Affairs Office of the White House during the Clinton administration, and the Harris County District Attorney's Office, and I'm probably missing a lot of others in this list. She has an incredible array of expertise behind her. She married her wife, Sonia, as soon as the law allowed, which I also love. And I'm learning she's just the kind of person who is not afraid of a challenge. I always feel like Elle Woods from Legally Blonde when I say that, which is why she has taken on our criminal justice system as an active member of the Texas Children's Justice Act Task Force and an attorney for many who cannot afford a lawyer, including children in juvenile courts, as well as an advocate for victims of human trafficking. And now she's here with us today taking on this ultimate challenge as the next The Rabble in the House quiz show champion. Thank you for joining us, Anne.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here. And Alisa and I competing against each other because that's not a fair fight. So I'm glad to be here, but I do not want to compete with her. She's awesome.
Well, we'll try to make it so that everyone wins, maybe, including the state of Texas.
That's what we need in November. We need nine of us to win to flip the house. So I'm all in favor of that. We're all winning.
Amazing. Okay, y'all, we're gonna do a fun little warm up here before we get into our hard-hitting quiz questions. So our first challenge for you is to go find something near you that you feel either represents you as a human or your district in some way. So ready, go.
So Anne, it looks like you grabbed your item first.
Yes.
What do you have?
So what I have is an abstract angry donkey. And so my wife actually gave me this, and she gave it to me more than a year ago when we started this campaign, because she is so invested. And so she's not only invested in our campaign in 134, she's invested in the national level and ensuring that Vice President Biden and Senator Kamala Harris win, because we absolutely have to win. So this represents me. My parents were both Democrats. In fact, my mom was the only Democrat to win in Harris County in 1994. They taught me the value of voting at an early age. And so I am a lifelong yellow dog Democrat. And the reason I think this represents who we are at the moment is it's a very angry donkey. And when I talk to voters right now, they are really upset with what's happening, not only nationally, but locally, when we look at the impact of COVID-19 and Republicans' failed leadership to protect Texans. And so I fully expect that voters are going to turn up in November and represent the fact that Democrats are ready to have a voice.
Okay. I love that. We're no longer yellow dog Democrats. We're angry, abstract,
angry
donkey Democrats.
Metal donkeys.
I love it. Alisa, what do you have?
I am a native Texan. And so my grandpa, this reminds me of my grandpa on my dad's side. He never left the house in Pflugerville without his Stetson. And so I keep one right here to remind me of grandpa. So we're Texans through and through. And I am excited to be running to represent Texas House District 94 and all Texans in the State House. We need legislation that is beneficial to all of us, not a segment, not the 1%, not our friends, but for all of us. We need laws that benefit everyone.
Love it. And you look really good in that hat.
Thank you, darling.
All right, so let's for real get this game started now. Becky, what is our first question?
Okay, do y'all need to stretch or anything? You feel ready? You feel limber? Okay, our first question is for Alisa. Okay, Alisa, true or false? The quickest, most cost-effective, most proven way to get healthcare coverage to 2.2 million uninsured low-wage Texas adults, many of whom are essential workers, is to accept $10 billion per year from the federal government by joining the 39 other states that have opted into Medicaid expansion. True or false?
True. I mean, really, yeah. And I'm not sure why our governor, and I'm just supposed to say true or false, right? True.
You say whatever you want.
True.
Well, you are correct. Yes, it is really shocking and gets more and more shocking to me all the time that we have not accepted Medicaid expansion. But I just want to back up a step for people who don't maybe know what Medicaid is or what Medicaid expansion means, because I didn't know before I got involved in all of this. So Medicaid is a federal program that gets health care coverage to vulnerable populations. And currently, Texans can pretty much only sign up for Medicaid coverage if they're elderly, pregnant or newly postpartum, children, or severely disabled. So right now in Texas, if a single parent with two kids has a yearly income between $3,900 per year and $22,000 per year, if they are in that zone, then they earn too much to qualify for Texas Medicaid, which is mind-blowing. But obviously they can't afford insurance. So the Affordable Care Act gave states a choice to expand the Medicaid program to people like that who don't make enough money to afford health insurance. Essentially, starting in 2014, the federal government said, if you states offer Medicaid to these people who can't afford insurance, we'll cover 90% of the cost. You just have to cover 10%. Oh, and by the way, that 90% is coming from tax dollars your residents pay anyway, and it will just go to other states if you don't accept Medicaid expansion in Texas.
Well, that sounds like a great deal.
Right? But because it was a program implemented under Obama, Texas Republicans said, well, we can't support anything with Obama's name on it. So thanks, but no thanks. We'll continue letting our tax dollars go to other states. And also, we'd like to maintain our record of having more uninsured people than any other state. So,
yeah. And so Texas ranks the lowest in the country for uninsured children. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Absolutely.
All right, Anne, are you ready for your first question?
Absolutely.
Here we go. Which of the following people would Medicaid expansion impact? Get ready. I'm a little long-winded. All right, so A, local taxpayers at a potential savings of $4.3 billion on uncompensated care and a gain of about $525 million in new tax revenue. My brain like can't even fathom those numbers. Is it B, people who need jobs with an estimated 303,000 new jobs created annually with Medicaid expansion? C, essential workers with low hourly wages, such as those in childcare, service industries, transportation, construction, and all of those who have been impacted by the pandemic. D, children with disabilities, since about 57% of schools report that they have trouble meeting special education mandates without Medicaid funding. E, children in foster care, which is a growing number, likely due to the lack of resources to address the opioid crisis. F, the 400,000 Texans who have experienced mental illness or substance use disorders who could gain health insurance. Those are just the folks who could gain health insurance and access to mental health care under Medicaid expansion. Is it G, rural communities who have higher rates of hospital closures coupled with higher rates of uninsured? Is it H, Black, Indigenous people of color, especially our Latinx communities who have disproportionately higher uninsured rates than whites? Or is it I, all of the above, all of us? It impacts all of us. This is the healthcare episode. Literally, everything relates back to healthcare.
Absolutely.
So which will it be?
Absolutely, it is I, all of the above. And so everything that you rattled off there is absolutely correct. That is the benefit of Medicaid expansion. And when we talk about Medicaid expansion, this started back in the Republican domination of the Texas legislature in 2011. Not only did they reject Medicaid expansion, just because Becky said, because it had the phrase Obamacare tied to it, and they did it on partisan grounds, but they drew our lines to be such that for a decade, they had an entire group that would go along with them. So let me tell you about where I'm running in House District 134. This is such an important issue because the medical center is part of our district. And when you talk about leaving money off the table, it's been $100 billion left off our rolls for this last decade. And just as Becky said, this is not magical money coming from somewhere else. These are our federal tax dollars that were due to come home to supplement the need of the vulnerable. Just as Elisa said, we have the highest rate of uninsured children in the nation. Don't tell me we're such a great state when we have left behind our children. So we absolutely need to do Medicaid expansion. And how much are all those angry Democrats and everybody recognizing it? So much that my Republican opponent is now putting flyers on doors saying, this is a great idea. I think we should absolutely do Medicaid expansion. But as we like to say as Democrats, I got the receipts. And I got the receipts that for a decade of Davis, you voted against Medicaid expansion, campaigned on the idea that my asking for Medicaid expansion was something illogical and was gonna bust our budget. It is time, just as Alyssa said, start serving all of Texans, start serving your medical community. Do Medicaid expansion. Stop the extreme partisanship of Governor Greg Abbott, extreme Republicans, and let's get some stuff done for Texans. So I have all the above.
Absolutely. Yes, that is correct. And I feel like we all just, whenever we talk about healthcare, I feel like because the numbers are so absurd, we always rattle off these really big, overwhelming numbers. And I think healthcare is such a personal issue for each of us, though, that I would love to hear you talk a little bit about also what this fight means to you personally, yeah, and you know, your own experience with our healthcare system.
So I'm a cancer survivor. I got diagnosed with a stage 3 thyroid tumor at the age of 31. by the time they finally caught it, metastasized and spread. And so I was incredibly lucky because not only do I live in House District 134, I got to walk into MD Anderson, which is one of the finest cancer centers in the world. And when I walked in there, they had already figured out a way not only to treat this cancer, but to make me effectively whole again. And so I was able to beat cancer with the help of those physicians, and I have been a healthy individual ever since. But the day I beat cancer, I started a new war, and that's with the insurance companies, because every time I turned around and tried to get coverage, it's like, oh no, we're not covering you. You have what's called a pre-existing condition. And so I had my physicians write letters to say there is nothing wrong with her. She's completely healthy, has no evidence of disease, and she's a healthy young adult. Give her access to coverage. And they said no. So much so that I got thrown into the Texas high-risk pool. So I remember when my opponent was running for office as a Tea Party Republican and promising that she would fight Obamacare at every turn to keep people like me and the countless of Texans that don't have coverage. The problem was I have chosen to do the kind of work where I represent indigent individuals in our court system, which means I don't have a big corporate job. I don't have a big government job. I don't have an insurance behind me. I'm an individual Texan who wants to serve other Texans. And because of that, I have trouble getting access to insurance because of people like my opponent and because of the Republicans who for a decade have fought like hell to keep me from being able to pay for medical coverage and have the ability to go to a doctor. So that's the fight we're talking about. I live it every day. And I think about COVID. And I think about right now the people that are surviving COVID are probably going to start a new bubble of pre-existing conditions that they're going to have to deal with for life. And so this is the time that we absolutely have to stand up, break the partisanship, and allow people the ability to pay for their own coverage.
I've worked for a governmental entity for 18 years. I had great insurance, low deductibles. And when I left to start my own promotional products business, I had to get insurance. And so I am a living, shining example that the Affordable Care Act works. That is the coverage I have had for the past 5.5 years. My opponent is staunchly against the Affordable Care Act. It has benefited me. It has benefited my employees. So it is, you know, I'm confounded about, what the opposition is, but we know what the opposition is. It's that it's called Obamacare. But I've benefited from it, for the past 6.5 years. Also, stepmother, Dora, passed away from cancer in January. I filed to run for this seat. She was diagnosed in June of 2019. And so she and my dad are Pflugerville. They had been married 43 years. So I was taking care of her, her care. Going to Pflugerville often, dealing with the doctors, making the appointments, making sure they were getting there. And so I've known people with cancer, but I intimately learned about cancer, all of the barriers, the barricades. We couldn't get her to MD Anderson. They did not take her Austin Independent School District coverage. She had worked for AISD for 30 plus years as a teacher's aide. So we could not get that specialized treatment from MD Anderson. I learned a whole lot. Our teachers, our retired teachers need better coverage. Our folks in Texas need coverage. And hey, ACA works for me and my employees.
I so appreciate both of you being willing to share your personal stories with us and kind of go on a limb and let us see that window into your lives. Thank you so much. I really feel like that's how people learn. You know, we get so insulated into our own experience. It's so important to hear about all kinds of different experiences so we can advocate not just for ourselves, but for everybody. So thank you both. That was so powerful. But I'm going to move us on to our next question. And it's going to be for Elisa. So this is multiple choice question. Which of the following did not happen in Texas in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic? Okay. Was it A, in the spring, 659,000 Texans lost their health insurance when they lost their jobs, meaning that 29% of Texans under 65 are now uninsured, more than any other state. B, up to 362,000 jobs in the healthcare industry in Texas came under threat because so many people have had to stop visiting healthcare providers after losing their insurance. C, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton doubled down on his lawsuit to entirely throw out the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, including protections for pre-existing conditions. D, Texas stopped kicking children and new mothers off of Medicaid at least until this public health emergency is over. Or E, the Governor Abbott urgently called the special session of the legislature to address the COVID-19 crisis. Which of those did not happen?
Were there, how many responses were there? A, B, C, D, E?
Yes.
E.
That would have been nice.
Would have been nice.
You would think.
Would have been nice. But, you know, he wanted to, you know, run roughshod over everybody and you know, make all the decisions himself.
Yeah, or non-decisions, really.
Or lack of decision making. Yeah.
Although one of the decisions he did make was to basically ban abortion, which is safe and legal healthcare for 30 days because of the pandemic. So thanks for that one.
One thing I want to highlight here in this list, one of the things I mentioned, because of COVID, Texas has guaranteed healthcare coverage for new mothers through Medicaid until this health emergency is over. So Texas is doing a good thing there, but it may not last. Before the pandemic, new moms in Texas who didn't have other health insurance were getting kicked off of Medicaid after 60 days after giving birth, even though studies have shown that most maternal deaths occur after that 60-day mark. And in the 2019 legislative session, a bill was introduced that would have guaranteed coverage for new moms for up to a year to save a lot of those moms who were dying after that 60-day mark. And it didn't pass. And in fact, Elisa's opponent, whose seat she's trying to flip, Tony Tinderholt.
Wait, this is Tony yes. Tinderholt's seat?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, y'all. He's like a yes. cartoon villain.
Yes. Yeah.
We have to yes. get rid of this one.
Yeah.
We have to get rid of all of them. But
so
man.
Not only did he vote against that bill that would have likely prevented mamas from dying, he also introduced a bill that would have made it possible for women who have abortions to be sentenced to the death penalty. So he doesn't want to protect new mothers from dying after they give birth. And if a woman decides not to go through with a pregnancy, he wants the state to be able to execute her. So it's like he literally wants women to die no matter what. It makes me so mad.
He is not he doesn't seem to be a big fan or supporter of women. However, he has been married a number of times, I think 5. You know, it's really amazing. I met him finally. Now I've been in Arlington for 35 years or more. I stopped counting, so 35 years. And my first time meeting him was at a redistricting hearing. I think it was back in January. And so as engaged and involved as I am in Arlington, I mean, I'm all over the place. Everybody knows me. I've never met this man. So we bumped into each other in the hallway. I was running late to the redistricting hearing. Apparently he was too. And he putting on a tie, and I said, I am going to introduce myself to him. And he said, and you know, he was pleasant, and he was shocked that I stopped and introduced myself and said hello. And he said, I know you're coming after me about the abortion bill, and I'm not changing my stance on that. I said, you're right, coming straight for you. So, you know, otherwise we had a decent conversation, but you know, he's not active and engaged here. And then he introduces harmful, hurtful, you know, not cartoon character bills. Those are real bills that, you know, he attempted to get past. Scary.
Yeah.
It's scary stuff. It's hard to believe that yes, this is even our reality sometimes. Folks like that. But Anne, we have the next question for you. All right. When the pandemic first hit our state, Texans panic stockpiled essentials, like essentials, I put that in air quotes. Is it A, hand sanitizer, B, toilet paper, C, non-perishable food, or D, guns, or is it E, all of the above?
Unfortunately, it's all of the above. And so, yeah, we saw Texans that unfortunately we have fallen prey to Governor Greg Abbott and his concept when he said, California's bought more guns than us, Texas, we can do more. We are a state that our leadership has been loyal to the NRA and has promoted this concept that somehow these weapons are part of essential. And I think further from the truth. I think in a moment of crisis, we need to be more responsible about responsible gun ownership. And so those are some of the changes that we have to make. Let me also just say that I could not help but smile at the idea that Alyssa is straightforward gunning for her opponent and what a difference it's going to make in that district to have her instead of our current representative. And so I'm really excited to be on here with her and get a chance to see her. And yes, we absolutely need these changes in Texas, not just for healthcare and for women's health, but for gun issues.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm so excited to see the two of y'all working together here in Austin at the Capitol. But yeah, that's absolutely right. So I don't know if y'all remember back when the pandemic first hit Texas, those guns were flying off the shelves. Stores were even running out of ammunition. But, you know, as Anne is saying here, there's a lot of false information out there. In fact, you know, there's federal background checks actually for gun sales also in Texas went up 92% in the month of March. But guns, as we're saying, don't actually make us safer, and obviously not from a pandemic. But
you can't shoot COVID.
You can't shoot COVID.
Weird.
And it's, exactly. So studies have found that in only less than 1% of crimes, people successfully defend themselves with a gun. And that's like with an actual person-to-person crime, not like a COVID crime situation, which I'm pretty sure, as Becky mentioned, that's like a 0%. Guns are actually making us less safe in a lot of instances when it comes to things like increased suicide risk, risk of homicide, domestic violence, and accidental injuries. And, you know, we have this last year marked the mass shooting in El Paso, which was the deadliest anti-Latino attack in modern history. And still our Texas leadership does virtually nothing. And I know you and your Republican opponent have very different views on gun violence. We've been talking about a lot of your differences today, but can you talk a little bit about like what a couple of your priorities would be in the next session that differ?
So I'm grateful to be endorsed by every town, and I stand with Moms Demand Action and will promote their common sense gun reforms, which are background checks, extreme risk protection orders, and safe storage provisions. These policies are the kinds that could have prevented the 4 mass shootings we've had in Texas in the last 2 years, which are 4 of the top 10 that we've had in Texas. In the shadow of those events, the legislature met and the NRA told us that their last session in Texas was one of the best that they've ever had. And so that's our hope, is to make this last session the last session that the NRA maintained control over our Republican legislature. And my opponent is no different. She has bragged of her A rating with the NRA. She has voted for open carry. She has voted for guns in schools. She has even voted that anybody can run out and get a silencer. I can't think of any Texan who needs to run out and get a silencer, except that it might be on the NRA wish list. She's also made training hours reduced. And so at a time where we should be asking people to be more responsible in their gun ownership, she's allowed it to be reduced and less. And so there is a clear divide between me and my opponent. I will stand with the moms who are terrified to send their kids to school right now, not just because of COVID, but the everyday gun violence that we see. And it's not just the mass shootings. It's the everyday gun violence that disproportionately impacts communities of color. And so we as Texans have got to stand up. And let me tell you, I like to tell this story about running for office and talking with one of my former students He's a big old guy. He said, well, of course I'm going to help you because I really like you, but don't take my guns. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about it. Would you pass background check? And he said, of course. And I said, if something was happening to you and you were in a mental health crisis where you were danger to killing your wife and your kids, would you want somebody to intervene and take your weapons away so you couldn't kill them? And he said, well, of course. And I said, well, do you store your guns in such a way that your kids can't play with them and shoot themselves or their friends, or people can't break into your home and steal your guns to run out and kill other people? And he said, of course. And I said, then guess what? We're talking about the same thing. And so we can no longer play to the fear that the NRA is creating that somehow we want to get your guns. We want responsible people maintaining responsible gun ownership. And that doesn't mean that we have to allow everybody to run out and get one and slaughter people on our streets, schools, and shopping malls. So yes, that's the clear distinction between me and my opponent. I stand with moms, not the NRA.
Hmm. Well, this is the what the health care episode. And gun violence is a major health crisis, and especially in the States. So I so hugely appreciate where you stand on those issues. Absolutely.
Absolutely. It's an easy position. If you care about people, it's an easy position.
Totally agree. All right, y'all, we're down to our last two questions here. So this is going to be the last question for Alisa. All right, Alisa, this is going to be another multiple choice question. And, you know, just as it underlies every other issue, systemic racism means that our health and the health of our families is likely to be better or worse depending on our skin color, regardless of income. And studies in Texas have found that Black mothers and their babies have much worse health outcomes than white mothers and babies. And according to, this is the question, according to Texans Care for Children, which of the following are factors that contribute to racial disparities in the health of Texas mothers and babies? A, implicit biases in our healthcare system. B, the physical toll of ongoing stress can affect the health of mothers, and persistent stress related to racism adds even more to this weathering effect on Black women's health, especially. C, Black adults in Texas have less access to health insurance compared to white adults. In 2018, 23% of Black Texas adults were uninsured compared to 15% of white Texas adults. Or is it D, all of the above?
That would be D. I mean, the healthcare disparity is, yeah, it's as you have shared here with those statistics. I think you guys know that I am the NAACP president here in Arlington. Our national office has an entire healthcare justice department, and it runs the gamut. So, you know, the disparities are there, and we've got to look at them, be honest that they exist, and come up with real solutions for the disparate treatment and the disparate service for African Americans and other communities of color when it comes to healthcare services.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, in the past several sessions, the legislature hasn't done enough at all to address these disparities or healthcare generally. So I'm curious to know what issues and what measures would you be pushing for when you get into the Texas House?
So Medicaid expansion, mental health legislation that addresses mental health in Texas. As the NAACP president, I may have mentioned it pre-show, since I've been president here, there have been, well, in the last 4.5 years, Arlington police have killed four African-American males, a Hispanic male, and a white female. Recently, we got an indictment in the case of Margarita Brooks, who is the white female homeless woman. But in our very first case, in the Jonathan Paul case, neighbors called because they heard loud crying and banging on a wall, and he was in his apartment alone. And they put him in the patrol car and took him to jail. And they should have taken him to the county hospital, John Peter Smith Hospital. They did not. They realize now, after all of our advocacy, that is what they should have done. They took him to jail as he cried in the back seat alone. And they put him in a cell, and he stopped up a toilet with his pants in an attempt to move him from the wet cell to the dry cell. I mean, he was docile. He was crying. He backed himself into a corner, and about 12 officers were pulling on him, yanking on him, all that stuff. And he was George Floyd before there was a George Floyd. They asphyxiated him, and he died a couple of days later. He should have gone. He should be here because he should have gone to JPS, the county hospital. Our officers, our first responders, they have got to understand mental health issues when they arrive on scene. They've got to know how to deal with those. You know, in all of the discussion about shifting money and police budgets, you know, I've been asked about whether or not mental health a professional should respond to 911 calls. And I do not think civilian mental health professionals should respond to 911 calls. I think police should respond. And once they get there, if they have been adequately trained, they identify the situation and call for help. Dallas Police Department has a mental health unit. Arlington Police Department has one staffer. So, you know, Medicaid expansion, a focus on legislation that addresses mental health, those are very important to me.
Right. And you have so much experience too. Becky mentioned that you worked 22 years at the Tarrant County 911 district. So,
oh yeah, don't get me started there. You know, because most Texans, you know, a lot of lower income Texans, those without health coverage, use the emergency room as their primary care provider. You know, we see it all the time. Each year we used to recognize 911 kid heroes, young people who knew what to do in an emergency. So we'd have a press conference and, you know, we'd talk about their story and reunite them with the dispatcher. But, you know, over 18 years of doing that, I have, you know, made friends with the parents and that type of thing. And I always managed to ask them, you know, what happened that caused you to have a seizure? And they either ran out of medication or they couldn't, you know, they couldn't afford it, that type of thing. And so we really, prescription drugs, those prices have got to come down so that people can afford them. You know, when I first started recognizing children heroes, I'd go, wow, that six-year-old was great, or that nine-year-old was great. But over the years, I have begun to feel sorry for those children because they are seeing their loved one in an episode and they have to be the adult and call for help and that type of thing. But yeah, so prescription drug pricing has got to come down. And folks have got to have health coverage that is affordable. And we can quit overburdening our emergency rooms with, you know, cases of people who may just be sick.
Yeah. I'm so ready to get y'all in office to make that happen. All right. Anne, here is your last quiz question. Are you ready for this?
Ready.
All right. So given this unprecedented healthcare crisis, our governor, Greg Abbott, held a press conference earlier this month and urged all those seeking office this year, so people like y'all, to pledge which of the following statements? What does he decide to focus on? Is it A, is the pledge, I'll defend our public health by following the recommendations of medical experts and scientists when it comes to responding to the COVID-19 pandemic?
Or is it B, I'll defend regular Texans' ability to recover from the pandemic by focusing relief on small businesses and supporting expanded unemployment relief? Or is it C, I pledge to support any measures that discourages or stops efforts to defund police departments in Texas, which is, even though I probably realize that this is just an attempt to distract from my failure as a governor in this pandemic response and BT Dub, also an inaccurate portrayal of what a lot of these cities are doing, which are actually choosing to reinvest in the public services that will address the systemic racism and root causes of crime, keeping our communities safer and healthier in the long term. He didn't really say that last part. Which is it going to be, A, B, or C?
It's that last one. It's C. And it is, just as you said, it is Governor Greg Abbott who has been the picture of failed leadership, because he followed along with Trump. He followed him at every turn when he said, absolutely, basically, now we know because they've been busted, downplay this thing, reopen for business. And Abbott jumped all over that. Not only did he jump all over that, I remember when they were praising hairdressers who were violating local rules and giving haircuts. All of a sudden that became a real priority for the Republican Party. And they went around saying, you don't need to wear a mask. And so what happened? Our medical center was filled up to capacity with 107% capacity in our ICUs. Literally thousands of Texans paid the price for their failed leadership with their lives. And then let's talk about what he's jumping on with this phrase, defund the police. And we know that that's generated from the other side to try to make an issue out of something that's not. I'm sure Alyssa agrees with me because she's basically been in our community public sector around the idea of law enforcement and community policing. And that's exactly what we need. And so no, we don't support defunding the police. What we support is recognizing where we need to make transitions. And let me tell you, I'm your former chief human trafficking prosecutor in Harris County, one of the first ever established positions like that in the nation, where we rethought the concept of, wow, do we prosecute women who are being sold on the street? Or do we start targeting the people who are raping and exploiting them and making the money off of them? That's the kind of change, right, that we made. We incorporated new alternative court programs such as Safe Court, a grant that we received from the Department of Justice from the Obama administration to say, let's take that vulnerable population between 17 and 25 and get them out of the revolving door of criminal justice. These are the kinds of reforms we're talking about. Absolutely, we're talking about police accountability in dealing with the ideas of systemic racism. But you know what? We were making progress. We were implementing programs like community policing, restorative justice. And I saw those being implemented through the federal government of the Obama administration. And what I have seen lately in the Trump administration is this turning the police against citizens, dismantling every concept of democracy in our Constitution. And this kind of dovetails to Alyssa's question about mental health and where we need to do things better in our medical community. Our Harris County Jail is the state's largest mental health facility in Texas. That's disgraceful. And not only that, it's not only a human cost, it's an economic cost. It costs so much more to incarcerate an individual than it does to get them treatment. Just as Alyssa said, don't force people to run to the ER at their breaking point. Let's help them at an earlier stage. And so, yes, is he trying to bait and switch and change the conversation? Absolutely. Does it have anything to do with the moment of saving lives and what we can really do to combat these issues? No. And so I'm not falling for it. I, like every other Democrat running this cycle, we're going to support law enforcement in the manner that we need to do it. We're going to support the Black Lives Matter movement and the fact that we need to deal with these issues. And part of that is undoing the decades of dismantling that Republicans have done to our education and health system. That's where we start making a difference. That's the kind of change and reform that we're going to make. It's this thing that scares them to death, because there's some angry Democrats that are ready to see new policy decisions in Texas. And we are the definition of that hope.
Absolutely. And I will say that those first two pledges that I read off in that question were written by the Texas Democratic Party in response to this pledge. And so I have never been more proud to be a part of the Texas Democratic Party, to be supporting women like the two of you, just judging by all of your answers today and your knowledge and that the fact that you see the nuances in these issues and have your life experience that informed them. And I so, so appreciate you so much.
You guys are welcome. Thank you so much for giving us a chance to be on to talk about how important this election is, because it is not just a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. It is everybody's support. So in the way that people can volunteer for the campaigns, help each one of us out, There are basically 17 of us running. We need 9 seats in Texas to flip. And there are great Democratic candidates up and down the ballot, but we need the local individuals to recognize that this is not just an important election on the presidential cycle. It really impacts down ballot. Our down ballot races are going to have a significant impact on your daily lives. We're about the most important races that people need to know about and what can change the foundation of our nation for a decade because of gerrymandering and redistricting that's coming up. And so we need your help.
Yeah, these House races are imperative. And so you probably have an audience of great Democrats that watch the rabble. But what I like to encourage people to do is go and grab 5-10 people. Don't go get your Democratic friends. Don't text them that they're going to vote. And I tell people that at my monthly NAACP meeting. We are preaching to the choir. Everybody in this room or the Zoom room, make a commitment to text, call, drag 10 people, your cousin, your whomever, your neighbor, somebody who doesn't traditionally vote, and get them to the polls and get them there early. October 13th to the 30th, there is no freaking reason folks should not vote early. And I preach it, I fuss it, I cuss it. And I mean, there is no reason. And I have a huge family, mother's side, dad's side. I have 7 aunts and uncles on each side and tons of cousins. So if you just deal with your family, but neighbors, community members, if people don't vote, I swear, I'm just gonna give up on life. I mean, and they've got to vote down the ballot, all the way down. I spoke to a group, I'm not gonna even say, it was an employees group, and the topic was voting myths. And so the host said, so one myth is that you have to vote for everybody on the ballot. That's a myth, right? And I went, no, that's true. That's not a myth. But what she was getting at is some people don't want to vote because they feel like they don't know all the candidates on the ballot. And so they thought they only should vote if they knew everybody on the ballot. And I said, you don't have to, but you have to. You've got to vote for everybody on the ballot. So there's lots of education that still needs to take place out here. And so it's imperative to all of us who are engaged politically or pay attention to not just talk amongst ourselves. Go out there and get those folks at the grocery store, anywhere, to go vote and vote early.
1,000%. Yeah. And one of the, I got to give Governor Abbott credit where credit is due. I appreciate that he extended the early voting period. So we actually really don't have an excuse not to vote early because we have more time.
All right, ladies.
Well,
this was a pretty close game, but it looks like you've both tied and are the rabble in the house quiz show champions. Congratulations.
All right.
I wish we had like a Zoom belt to hand to y'all.
A big championship Zoom belt.
Exactly. Congratulations. Exactly right. But seriously, we are so grateful that you've both stepped up to run. It couldn't, I know, have been an easy decision. It can't be easy on the campaign trail, especially with a pandemic going on, but we would be so incredibly lucky as Texans, all of us, to have you representing us in the Texas House. And as a thank you for all that you are fighting for on our behalf, our partners from the Blue Action Democrats of Texas and Flip the Texas House have offered a $500 match donation to each of your campaigns.
Oh, wow.
So for those of you, yes.
That's great. Thank you so much. I'll tell you what, we love match donations because you inspire people to give just a little bit more, which is so vital running through these next few months. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And so far, for all of our other episodes, we've made the match. So I'm talking now for each of you at home, watching or listening. Please help us help them help you by donating in the link we're dropping in the chat now, or you can find it in the podcast show notes. It's not an easy time to fundraise, right? There's a ton of corporate lobbyists, also corporate lobby money against us on the other side. So if you care about any of the issues we talked about today, ask yourself how much that's worth to you and then click on the link. $5, $10, $500, all of it. We'll take it. Thank you, ladies, so much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
And make sure that everybody out there, make sure that you follow these ladies, Alisa Simmons and Ann Johnson, on social media, go to their website, sign up to get updates from them so that you can support them. And ladies, you're amazing. I can't wait until you're repping Texas in the house for
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Knock on wood. We always knock on wood, but you're absolutely right. We are looking forward to getting through this election, and I sure hope that we all get to serve together. You got some great Democratic candidates.
Absolutely.
Okay, Becky, what is our Blue Squad mission today?
Okay, so if, like me, you are well and truly fired up and full of rage at our healthcare failures in Texas, this is the point in the show where we tell you what you can do about it. It is time for our Blue Squad mission! So
you and I just want to be like wrestling announcers, actually.
I think so. I'm going to think about what my wrestling name would be, because I feel like that needs to happen. So it's become more clear than ever that the 2021 Texas legislative session needs to be the healthcare session, much in the same way that the last session was the education session. How to make that happen? Well, we are going to have to be pretty loud and make sure that every candidate and every elected official knows that that has to be the priority. Luckily, there is a group called Sick of It Texas that is holding up a bullhorn for regular Texans to shout at our lawmakers. And your mission today is to go to sickofittx.org and sign up for updates on how you can demand better healthcare for all Texans. Then join the folks from Sick of It Texas and leaders from seven other southern states on October 1st. For the Southerners for Medicaid Expansion Digital Vigil at 6 p.m. Central Time. And do you know who is moderating this event?
Who is moderating this event?
Stacey Abrams.
What?
Yes. Aww. So I
love her so much.
I know. She's amazing. And I've been to a couple of virtual events with her, and she just is always so inspiring. So I can't wait to virtually see y'all there. And we will link... Oh,
I always have this book near me. It's the best. It's called Minority Leader. If anyone has like imposter syndrome about being an activist or like a leader of any kind, you should read this book. It's like a how-to handbook. Anyways, Minority Leader by Stacey Abrams. I'm obsessed with it. She's not paid me for this quick plug. I just decided to do.
Amazing. I'm going to add that to my to-read list for after the election. I feel like all I'm going to want to do is just like lay in bed and read for many weeks. but before we can do that, we have to do all the things. So join us and Sick of It Texas and Stacey Abrams on October 1st. We will link to that event in the chat for the Facebook event and in the show notes. And then make sure that you go into your Blue Squad app under the Rabble and mark your mission of signing up for Sick of It Texas. And the vigil as complete so you can get points and warm fuzzies.
All right, guys, that is it for our show today. Thank you again to our guests, Ann Johnson and Alisa Simmons, for joining us. Don't forget to click on that link or check it out in the podcast show notes to donate. Help that $500 match fund for each of them so we can send them off with $1,000 each to help win their races. If you're watching this as the Facebook Live video, grab your phone right now and subscribe to our podcast in any pod library so you can just listen and play along with our game all over again if you didn't get enough. If you're listening to this as the podcast and you want to see our shining happy faces, as we said, you can go back, watch the video on our Facebook page, follow us on all the socials at The Rabble TX. And a very special thank you to Mariah, Lucy, Eliza, Carrie, and the scotch tape that is holding out this backdrop behind me. Thank you so much for helping us make the show happen.
And also, don't forget that the election is super soon, and so we are trying to make it easy for y'all to do all the things to flip Texas and get a new president. So make sure that you check out the Rabble Daily Democracy Challenge from now through the election. We will see you on the other side, y'all.
Bye. Thank you.